Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Obi-Wan Kenobi airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow Jedis in hiding. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. Hello, Dan. Good to be back.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. It's like we never left.
Is it? Okay.
If you're listening to these in quick succession, it's like we never left.
Yeah. Sure.
For us, yeah. It's been a week, but maybe for you, it's just been seconds.
Hello again. Why? Maybe take a break. Hydrate. We are here to discuss Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 3, which has, as of this recording, recently aired on Disney Plus. Tony volunteered to do a quick recap of this episode, and we'll talk a little bit about what happens.
All right. So there are basically kind of two threads in this story. And spoiler for the episode that you watched in preparation for this podcast, they will converge. Thread one, I guess, is the Inquisitor thread. Reva and Vader get some FaceTime, but there's some inter-office politics between Reva and the other Inquisitors vying for the open position of Grand Inquisitor. It seems like there's competition, and there's some toxic workplace behavior as they're all trying to like vie for Vader's blessing. Kenobi and Leia are on like an empty transport ship going to basically a random mining planet, as told to go by Kamal Nanjiani's character. They get there. They're looking for a recon or a rendezvous point that's like in the middle of nowhere. We are on a new planet, which is always exciting in Star Wars. It's a mining planet that doesn't seem like it's doing super great. They get picked up for a ride by a helpful NPC named Freck. Unfortunately, Freck also picks up some stormtroopers, and then they get taken to a checkpoint, and there's some fight. It looks like things are going real, real bad when a Imperial officer shows up and shoots the remaining stormtroopers, revealing that she is part of basically the Underground Railroad for Jedi. Obi-Wan, their new friend Tala, and Leia hang out in a town. There's some secret passageway talk, but the Inquisitors show up. Darth Vader himself is there. There's lots of basically torturing and killing of innocents to try and draw Obi-Wan out. Obi-Wan and Darth Vader kind of run off into the dark and have a fight. Just a quiet little moment between themselves. Some things are set on fire. And Tala and Leia are basically separated at Leia's insistence. Leia thinks she's, it's just ahead. Unfortunately, she bumps into Reva. Surely that won't be a problem. And Tala doubles back with her droid to save Obi-Wan from Darth Vader. I think that's my real, real fast overview of what happened
that's
in
good. That's
Obi-Wan
good.
Kenobi, Part 3.
That hits the high notes.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to say that struck me during this episode that I really like is being able to tell a small scale story with a lot of tension and menace. Like
yes.
The scene where they are on the transport and the stormtroopers get on is tense, even though, you know, mm-hmm. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, a Jedi. He's probably pretty, you know, capable of taking care of himself, but it feels tense, right? Like they're trying to go undetected, because like the risk that they play with through all of this is like, yes, we could deal with this exact situation that we're in right now, but the problem is if it escalates, right? There's a probe droid and it's like, well, somebody's going to be on the other end of that. So, but I really enjoyed that it feels very tense when they're just sitting there having a conversation and trying to pass themselves off as these innocent farmers. I thought that was well done.
And even when violence breaks out, Obi-Wan's using a blaster and kind of hopping around. He does not seem to be using, or I missed it if he was, he's really holding back with force powers, right? And you get that maybe some of that is like, after 9 years, does he still have a connection to the Force? Is it harder for him to do it, or is he just not? He's like conditioned himself against using it. Like you figure he probably could have Jedi mind tricked some people, or at least that's the Obi-Wan we see in A New Hope. Has no problems with a stormtrooper checkpoint, but this is not that Obi-Wan. This Obi-Wan is not doing so great.
Well, taking that Obi-Wan though, I was thinking about this too. I was gonna make the wisecrack that like Obi-Wan is really bad at infiltrating, right? When he drops Leia's name. But then I was also thinking about the fact that like when he lands, they start the episode with him dealing with the recognition that Anakin's alive, and we got more of that flashback. And then when he's walking in this grassland desert place, he actually sees Anakin Skywalker as Hayden Christensen sort of just standing there. So I think, and then that when he's talking about it, like Obi-Wan's talking to Leia saying, hey, I knew your mother. He doesn't say that, but Leia is able to figure it out. I think it's actually perhaps showing that more that, I don't necessarily want to use the word shell shock, but I think that Anakin is just so distraught. Excuse me. Obi-Wan is so distraught. Explains why he's making some very simple mistakes.
He is reeling.
He's reeling and can't even get through the basics. Because you're right. I think years later, I mean, we see him with Luke. He's calm, cool, collected, and very, it's like very cool.
Very zen, very he's savvy. The pro.
Yes.
I mean,
whereas here, moment, he's just here falling apart.
A 10-year-old is better at maintaining their cover than he is.
Right. And I think PTSD is not a bad way of putting it. And even before knowing Anakin is still alive, we see that he is having like nightmares and stuff, right? Like, this has already hit him hard, and it's 10 years later. 10 years later, he is still having like traumatic nightmares about, I mean, killing his best friend, or so he thinks at that point. So discovering, it's a little tricky to put this in a vacuum, right? Because we all know Darth Vader's alive. We all know they run into each other later, you know? So this is an exploration of a character moment. And so having to put ourselves in the shoes of, like, it's no big revelation to us that Anakin Skywalker is still alive, but it is
it's interesting
to him.
But that's the part that's enjoyable. Like, how does Obi-Wan, and that was, I think, one of her questions, like, how does Obi-Wan deal with that?
Yeah. The answer is not well
at all.
I thought the interactions, I love the conversations between him and Leia on the transport. I really like
nice.
Them. I thought there was a, there have been a lot of comments about this. I saw a particularly eye-rolling meme that I thought where there was a bit about like the two of them in the back of the truck. I know that somebody like subtitled it and it's like, I could tell you about your real father who you'll meet several times, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well,
no, he can't.
No,
I don't think he can.
I don't think so either, right? This, you know, as we see later in the episode when Vader does appear, think how scarring it would be to tell
your
10-year-old, like, oh, daddy's home.
Yeah. No, you obviously. And also, oh my God, that would traumatize a child.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also, in that scene, I also love, we talked about this too, is that Leia once again shows that, like, step too far intuition of, wait, you've been keeping something from me.
Right.
I just love that again, of how she's just so incisively picks up something that should just be subtext and makes it explicit.
And I like that, it also
is she the smartest 10-year-old ever, or is that a little bit of force sensitivity?
Oh, I think it's force.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's force.
I mean,
yeah.
I think you can decide whatever it is you want in your head. I like them both. I mean, I think Leia Organa's got a lot. I think, you know, she's got a lot of both.
There's some nurture happening.
Yeah.
I want to say, I thought that that scene actually puts into even better relief for me the decision Obi-Wan makes in A New Hope to lie to Luke about his dad. Like, because you can see the context now of the, like, what am I going to do? Tell this kid, like, who thought his father died as, like, a, you know, as a pilot on a navigator, a spice freighter, is like, no, sorry, kid, your dad's a mass murderer who murdered a lot of other people. Like, you can see Obi-Wan's the rationale in his mind for making that decision even better here.
I think the Star Wars, there's a lot in Star Wars of Obi-Wan makes choices that are
not great.
You know, could be critiqued. I wonder if there's a little bit more coming from a Qui-Gon appearance about prophecy, and like that basically it's just going to kind of mess Obi-Wan up further in terms of like, you can't mess things up with these kids. They're real, real important. that, you know, that only makes him worse at kind of helping the Luke and Leia navigate life.
And we started hearing, I thought, to that point, Tony, is like, we did start hearing Qui-Gon's voice. I think it was just playing back of,
it was
all the promises, like, promise me that you'll train him.
Yeah.
But it was good, I think, beginning to, open is like, Obi-Wan begins to lose it. Or at least struggles with the challenge of realizing he killed, that Vader is alive. It was, I thought, interesting foreshadowing exactly that point that we will, at some point, hear Qui-Gon come back.
Well, and I think we are starting to see, I mean, we're halfway through this series now, and you get a little bit better picture of what is going on. And I think it's important, you know, not only you mentioned where we see him in A New Hope in terms of how cool and collected and sort of Zen master he is at that point, but even in the episode that we covered in our member bonus episode, Twin Sons, which takes place a bit before that, he is also in that very self-assured, very, like, it's a long way from the Obi-Wan we're seeing right now to that Obi-Wan.
And he knows his place and he knows others' destinies as well.
So why, does he get there, right? Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah.
He has the future Obi-Wan has a role and a purpose and at sometimes a mission. And this Obi-Wan is lost, right? I think his relationship with Leia is interesting, and some of it is maybe because he's basically dealing with trauma and grief about Anakin here, but he's certainly not like paternalistic to her or parental to her, right? I mean, he's loyal to her, but it's like he doesn't know how to really behave around a child, basically.
Anybody at this point.
Anybody, because he is basically completely shut himself off and just lives in isolation and works in a butcher shop.
If you had to be in your house for like a year and not deal with other people, how would you feel about socializing?
Dan, let me ask you now.
Would I have Zoom or would I have a Jawa that came and stole my stuff?
Oh, no. You have a Jawa and one of those camel things. That's
your Jawa keeps stealing your router.
I have a parrot. It's not dissimilar. But,
I will say, I think of all of Boba Fett and what we've seen so far, I will agree with you, Dan. And I will even go so far as to say, I think the scene on that little transport and all that, like that 10-minute interaction, probably my favorite of the entire Boba Fett series in this one. Of just, again, it was high intensity, we got a lot of character development, and just really interesting. And then Freck, like, I legitimately like the character. I thought it was really great. Is he good? Is he bad? Like, I have no idea. He has the Imperial flag, but maybe like he's actually undercover. That's a great point. I hadn't even thought of that.
Like the Empire. Yeah. Like, so this is an interesting point somebody brought up at one point where it's like, I actually think it was John Maltz when we had a conversation over on Biff the other day where he's like, I kind of missed that, you know. Obviously, we have tried to be much more diverse and inclusive in our casting, and so it leads to things where you have, say, villains in the Empire who are people of color, whereas in the classic movies, it was like, well, they're all white dudes, right? It's like, because they're Nazis, basically, right?
And with British accents.
Yeah, so there's a simplicity to that, where is now more complex by introducing, you know, people of color and women and it's aliens as well.
Human. That's the interesting thing about Thrawn. Thrawn being the only alien.
And they talk about that. That's part of the text, is that Thrawn is the only alien. Thrawn being a character
really
from
like
Rebels and the extended universe who becomes a Grand Admiral. And he's the only one. And he, you know, it is basically seen as like, oh, yeah, you have to be a human to be a high ranking.
Even a stormtrooper, it seems like, right? We don't really have, you don't have alien stormtroopers, you don't have alien officers, none of that.
I think, Dan, you played the X-Wing TIE Fighter game that we played recently, that I'm blanking on the name, and they definitely kind of play up that, like, the rebellion is, like, humans are a fraction of the people in the resistance, and the Empire's got some token people, but it is very, it is very human.
Yeah. It's definitely human, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, basically, it's like Starfleet, Dan. It's very human-dominated, and it's, you know, they are literally imperial colonizers, and you even get a little bit here that in this episode, I think there's one line that's like, they're strip mining this planet for resources. It looked like it was, maybe it's all done on the volume. It looks a little bit like it was in Arizona Utah or somewhere like that.
I think there was
Southern California.
And that is one thing, one of my favorite things, like zoom way out from Star Wars of what is the story of the Empire. And we've seen this before of just I can't forget what it was in the comics or something, of just like the extraction they take on every planet.
I think I don't
and
know
just talking
like,
about the
Rebels,
toll of war.
Rebels does.
Yeah.
That.
Rebels does. That's
I,
right.
Yeah.
I really,
I don't,
really
and I don't know
that
if
plot.
Anyone had done that before Rebels.
Yes, I think the
maybe a little bit
Dark Empire, the comic book series. There's the World Devastators. They have these big machines that basically go down to planets and like harvest.
Because it
stuff
does kind
them.
Of like without that angle, it's like how does the Empire work? Like they just have more power. Unless there's basically that kind of colonizer, like, oh yeah, we're taking all of the natural resources. It's like, what holds this together? What are you using to build your war machines? Why can you do this that no one else could do it before? And the answer has to be like, we're strip mining you. You know.
Well, and even later,
Alderaan's fine, but the Outer Rim,
I was thinking like Starkiller Base in the sequel trilogy too, is even sort of that in a microcosm where it's like, oh yeah, we're just going to turn this planet into a giant gun.
Right. So it's clearly not sustainable, was one would say most of our climate policy is not sustainable, but that's for another podcast. But the...
This galaxy policy is unsustainable.
as it turns out, but the, and that's why the episode 8, they do, and like that's sort of the business of war. I thought that, I mean, not to digress too much, like I thought it was a very, that was the Rose and Finn's sort of side story.
Benicio
Didn't
del Toro.
Really work, but like I wish they could have landed that better, but I liked the intent of trying to tell that story of it, what is, no one's winning here.
Well, it's a little awkward because it's like, oh yeah, here are the war profiteers, and it's like, does that work if the Empire owns everything? Maybe, but also, and because they basically said like, oh yeah, they're getting rich off both sides, and it's like, can you get rich off of the freedom fighter resistance? And I guess maybe if the war goes on for generations, you get rich off both sides. It was a little, I felt like both heavy-handed, and I don't know if we hadn't really heard anything else about that before to kind of connect it in on. Yeah.
But to bring back to Frick, I think I enjoyed the character. I hadn't even thought about the alien perspective. That is, I think, a really unique character then. And Zach Braff just being like, he was an incredibly friendly mole person. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to like him and I wanted to trust him. And I was so sad when he's like, I brought you something interesting.
Yeah, it makes that turn just hurt so much, right? And they could have written that he like... he's ambivalent, or he, you know, like, is nervous and that tips off the stormtroopers. There were a lot of ways to get from stormtroopers are now, you know, putting him in front of a probe droid, but they made it that he is a collaborator, right?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
It was an interesting performance. I enjoyed having that. Also, at least the second cast member of Scrubs to do a voice in a Star Wars series. Donald Faison did the voice in Resistance. So just put that in there.
I think there's a little bit of a kind of play on, you know, in the previous episode with Kumail Nanjiani's character.
Yeah.
We have this other kind of gray in between character who seems like a shady fraud. Well, he is professionally a shady fraud, but the reveal is that he's a good guy. And here you have this, you know, and I mean, I think the message is like, there's a lot of people who are trying to figure out how do they exist in this world that's being crushed by the Empire.
Don't know who to trust at face value, right? And they even do that whole fake out.
Well, and then there's an Imperial officer that walks up and shoots.
Trust the actors. Trust the people that you recognize from episodes of SVU.
Well, I was surprised. I mean, I knew she was in the show, but of course, all of the promotional materials for her were, I think, that I saw were her walking around in an Imperial outfit.
Uniform,
So, you know, and, you know, she cuts an intimidating Imperial look. So, I was, you know, good, well played.
We're playing cast connections for a second, but of course, Indira Varma's
favorite game.
Indira Varma, who's among other things starred in Game of Thrones as the paramour of Oberyn Martell, played by Pedro Pascal.
Okay.
There's our Mandalorian connection.
There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My one issue with the scene is when the Obi-Wan shoots the stormtroopers, knocks out Frick. I will say also, just a quick sidebar there, and let's talk a little more about this, is I think with those deaths, that's the moment where I think Leia realizes just like how much risk she's in and later apologizes for running away. But okay, so Obi-Wan's
they even have the somewhat gratuitous stormtrooper that falls on the laser walls and gets like
that was fantastic. So the laser walls and like, oh, I've got to deactivate the laser walls. Like, just go around them.
Yeah, just go around them.
Those are around them.
Those are just for trucks, Obi-Wan.
I thought he was going to drop the truck. He left the truck. Yeah.
I was like, just go around it.
I thought that was funny.
He was not thinking tactically there.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
We meet Tala, who is I don't know what your reading was on this. She mentions in some point having joined the Empire before she realizes kind of
what they are.
So do we think she is an active officer? Like, this is her moment where she is like, all right, I've been like a mole or whatever, and now I don't have a choice. I've got to like, you know, blow my cover.
Yeah.
Or has she been pretending to be an officer on this particular planet? I didn't really, I felt like they didn't really detail that. Of the two, the reading to me was she talks about joining up. So I think she was an Imperial officer who was just tacitly helping people until she hit a point of like, well, I've burned my cover. I got to go.
I agree. I think for something, I like that reading more, both because of like recognizing it's Obi-Wan and people know it's Obi-Wan of like, this is worth burning my cover for. And two, also, it's just a neater explanation of how in the world she ended up on a...
Yeah.
With like...
Right.
Yeah, with three stormtroopers who trusted her, otherwise been like, who are you? Why are you taking... Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think an interesting character... we learn that she is, Tony, I think you put it right, the Underground Railroad for Jedi. She's got a safe house where she's been stashing people. We see that
a very cool droid.
A very cool loader droid.
Loader droid, yeah.
A lot of other people have been through this place, including, I think we get the name Quinlan, is Quinlan Vos, who is a Jedi Master who appears in the Clone Wars series, as well as some, if you want to go down that rabbit hole... There's a lot I didn't even know about this character from some of he features pretty heavily in one of the books as well, apparently, that I've not read. But he has a relationship with Ventress.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, there's a whole... He's got a lot apparently going on. Mm-hmm. And he only shows up in like a couple episodes of the Clone Wars series.
Which I think I missed those episodes. They were not on the watch list that I was given.
Yeah. So, but I mean, a hat tip that I feel like is A, they're mainly to... recognize the fact that in canon he has survived the purge, and that, you know, there may be other Jedi. He may or may not show up. I think that's a question mark. I'm not sure how much they want to delve into that, but I thought that was kind of fun, and I love the this figures in a little bit more later. The Jedi insignia is carved into the wall there as well, which is a nice moment.
I also love, though, when Reva comes in later and she's like, here are all the Jedi who are still alive.
Right. Oh, just taking notes.
Guest log.
Yep. Then tell me where they go. We also have, Reva and the Inquisitors. Tony, you mentioned they're meeting up front. That planet that they are on actually features relatively heavily in the Star Wars Fallen Jedi game.
Okay. I wondered. They have their water planet with a spire
it's
sticking
underwater,
out of it. And then they're... Yes. Yeah, I like their conference room with a undersea,
You spend some time in that area, okay. And there's some tough stuff happening there. But I enjoyed that. I also... thought the interplay between the Inquisitors, like you said, it's a interesting dynamic. You know, the Inquisitors are all kind of for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder how many Inquisitors do they go through? Because they are not a team.
Really don't get into that. And in fact, even later on, as we have Vader and show up with the Inquisitors, Reva's essentially told to stand down, and then still decides she's going to do things her own way.
A theme with her.
And she's still the most effective person, right? She's the only one to get results.
Now, I want to ask you is because I have this thing bothering me at the back of my mind about her, which is, do you foresee any possibility of a heel turn from her? Do you think there's any possibility? Redemption is too strong, but do you think that she... We speculated, and I think it's true, that... she may have been one of the Padawan from that opening scene where they're trying to get out of the temple, and that she clearly has a beef with Obi-Wan, or so we think. I'm trying to figure out if this is another example of sort of a bait and switch.
I feel like the long con doesn't super work.
She cut off a dude's hands and killed some Jedi, so like she's pretty far gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think she may... I mean, I think there may be the thing where like... Being an she may discover. I mean, I'm reading it as text right now that she wants to be the Grand Inquisitor. I would be totally willing to believe that she discovers that maybe that is not actually the job she wants. In part because it seems like then there's like six other dark force users gunning for your position all the time.
Paperwork and
There's something. There's some other shoe to drop with her.
Yeah,
it seems like. And I guess the question is it has it been a something all along, or will something change in her? I mean, I think we are seeing again and again she is out for herself, which suggests to me like, do not the the Imperials are about joiners, and you are not a follower. So what? You may need to find your own way in life in this crazy mixed up galaxy.
I agree with you that I think it is Texas now is that she wants to be Darth Vader. She wants to be Grand Inquisitor. She wants to be the side of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
If they decide to turn it, I would not be surprised. I think you can currently make that reading from it. What's a little interesting is that I feel like she is, as a viewer, I can't tell what is motivating her more, Kenobi or wanting to be by Vader's side.
Mm-hmm. It seems convoluted. Like they have basically given us that she is obsessed with Kenobi and we don't know why, right?
But I think we've been told it's because she wants to be by Vader's side, but I'm like, eh.
Not enough. It's not enough to be specifically...
Yeah, like what is... I mean, she's reading about him in the archive. Also, doesn't seem like he was that hard to get to. So why has no one else bothered? I don't know. Maybe we'll be... I may be disappointed by the answer to that question, but it feels like there's got to be something else going on.
Part of me wonders if we might spool that out a little bit next week if she is forced to sort of... We've seen how Leia deals with people that she gets in front of in terms of sort of unpacking what's in going on with them. So I wonder if that might come to
that
light.
That could be cool. I would like that.
Are you sure you want to be a bad guy?
It seems like you know Kenobi. How do you know him?
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and Leia was there. Well, I guess she knows that Anakin. So there can't be any reveal about Anakin because Reva's in on that.
Right.
But so. She doesn't know that Anakin is Leia's father.
Right, which is an interesting, adds a whole other dynamic, because when we watch this...
Yeah, Dan had to remind me that I had forgotten. I was trying to figure out, like, so when they go into the tunnels, like, why is Obi-Wan just trying to draw them away, and why is he...
Yeah.
We should talk about that entire fight, but it slipped my mind, and Dan had to put two together to me that it's right, Anakin doesn't know yet that he has kids. It's not that he's trying to find his kids. He doesn't know he has kids.
Yeah.
He's been told the kids are dead.
He and Obi-Wan are working at very cross purposes, right?
Because
Anakin wants Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan just wants to play keep away with the kids. Anakin, that's all that's important.
Obi-Wan is just playing for time. But he is...
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how much... I mean, there is a lot of Obi-Wan who does not seem like things are going great for him. And I guess let's talk about the fight. You know, they confront each other, which I was not expecting as a mid-series kind of thing. And in fact, I think there was the question... I mean, I think we asked, like, will they cross paths?
Yeah,
it seems like they need to. And is this their only confrontation in this six-part series?
I doubt it.
It doesn't seem narratively like it super works. The fight is very interesting. I mean, because they're not... I mean, Obi-Wan is just kind of flailing around. He does, you know, this is his first use of the lightsaber, right, in the series yet?
Yep.
So he pulls that out. But he's basically just trying to survive. But Darth Vader seems to kind of be toying with him. Like, he's just fighting with one hand, and he's pursuing him. But you get the feeling that, like, if he wanted Obi-Wan dead...
Well.
Maybe this would be a briefer conversation.
We know he doesn't, right? He wants to torture him.
Right.
Yeah, like, because he's the scene with the fire, right?
He's got a lot of things that he wants to say to him first, basically.
They both have a lot to work through.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they need some therapy.
Yes. And of course, you know, Men the fire
will totally
is...
have a lightsaber fight instead of going to therapy.
Yeah. You know, Darth Vader setting Obi-Wan on fire is a, you know, a thematic thing, not a tactical thing, right? Like, he's...
Right.
Yeah.
He wants him to feel... something of what he felt.
I still don't fully understand, though, when the two thoughts on the fighter. One, intentionally or not, I did appreciate that there was less acrobatics as there were in the prequels, we can begin to see, like, okay, by the time they get to A New Hope, they're on the older side, right? So, like, it was a little closer to A New Hope in fighting, which I appreciated.
Yes. Style is very similar. Hayden Christensen's style is clearly... built on the David Prowse, Bob Anderson sword fighting from the original trilogy.
Darth Vader is a little bit, I mean, I guess he's kind of going halfway between presumably maybe what he could be doing and how David Prowse depicted him. It's a little lurching and hulking, and he is not like a ninja bouncing off walls, right?
Right. That's true. And, we've never seen Vader as that, nor do we ever will, because otherwise, because he's a broken man.
But, and I think we're kind of establishing here that is a core to the character and not a... or at least an aspect of the character that we're doubling down on versus, well, we didn't have the special effects for the original trilogy, and we also, right? You know, he's got these robot legs and he's robot and one robot arm at least, or both robot arms. I mean, he's he is not
and
super
all the,
nimble.
Tubes to help him.
And he's still a menacing. Yeah.
Right. He's kind of like that. He's the unstoppable force, right? That's that's the scene that we get with him in the town.
Oh, which I love, by the way.
It's great. It shows. It's like the end of Rogue One, where it shows you that menace of like, this is why everybody is afraid of this
dude.
Which
was great, right? Because that was the... Oh, I guess, do we see that in Rogue One a bit too?
Yeah, when he goes down the hallway fight.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
six seconds,
to finally see of like why he is so feared in the galaxy. And that is, that it, even though it's just like seeing him slaughter without any rhyme or reason, just cruel.
Because he knows he'll pull Obi-Wan out, right? He's like, I'm just going to start killing people because sooner or later, like we've said with the Jedi, they can't resist.
And he can't be stopped. You can't shoot him. You know, he, you know, basically the only thing that can take him down is Jedi, and there aren't any more, right? So he may not be the deadliest Jedi in the world in all of time, but he is the deadliest thing among, you know, a bunch of stormtroopers who can't hit anything and a bunch of, you know, rebel guys who should really get helmets that cover their faces and whatnot. And, you know, he's scary and he's very tall.
But I think he's also, he's a very, very powerful force user, right? And we see that in the Rebels episode where he confronts
Kanan and Ezra.
Right? So, like, I think even if he isn't the most nimble of fighters right now, I actually still think, I mean, who would win in a fight, right? I think Darth Vader would win, and I think most of them is what we see. But I think the one question I had, though, is in the... So, in the end of the fight, after... what's her name again?
Tala.
Tala shoots the stormtrooper, and then the flames fly up again, and the loader comes down and carries Obi-Wan away. Again, I appreciate that we have to let Obi-Wan get away, but I also struggle with, why can't Darth Vader stop them?
Yeah, that was
a little
my question, too. I mean, other
there
than
was
that...
one bit that I kind of liked in there that I pointed out to you that I was reading, and I'm not sure if this was intentional or not. There's a scene where Vader's watching, and you see the reflected flames in the...
Is Vader afraid of
fire? Is he still scarred, Frankenstein-style? Literally,
literally
and figuratively scarred by the fire, and like, I just don't...
What,
I just,
Dan,
like, yeah.
Why is his office on a lava planet?
Yeah, it's like, masochism? I don't know.
I'm willing to believe
immersion
it. But it's,
don't immerse yourself in lava. Pro tip.
too immersive. It is a little bit Obi-Wan gets away because the story is not done yet. Which I don't love, but you know, it's a minor quibble in an episode that I otherwise found very enjoyable and interesting, and has so many beats to it that are
a
fun.
A small production detail I liked, which I think I told you, Kat, when we were watching, which was in kind of a homage to especially the A New Hope. There is a point where you get a close up on Vader, and you can actually kind of see Hayden Christensen's eyes through it, which is I think they use different lenses earlier on, and so if you look in A New Hope 2, you can definitely
they're
see
kind of
through
purple.
Them.
They're a little bit more sunglassy,
sort of. So you, I like that because it reminds you that there's a person underneath, which I think is always a little creepier.
I notice even, you know, when he's kind of walking around the town, we don't see a ton of Darth Vader and darkness. I thought a little bit of Empire Strikes Back under Cloud City, but I guess he has the cloak more like pulled around him because he's got all those glowing bits that I guess I know are there, but, you know, are a little bit more dramatic in those staging. So we did get James Earl Jones's voice, which we weren't sure if we were going
to
get or not. And I don't know if they're doing
to be
computer magic
that
to
they
it.
Are doing. Yeah, they are. It sounds like from what I saw posted in a couple places that they're using the same stuff they used on Mark Hamill's voice in Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian, which is this re-speecher program.
Yeah.
Which I think makes sense.
Does that mean it's not, he's not,
it's
James Earl Jones is not?
It's unclear. I think it's, a lot of it is digitizing probably earlier stuff he did, and they credit him, right? So I don't know if he did line readings and they sort of worked that in.
I think that's what I was reading. I don't know if they did for this, but with his most recent stuff in the movies, I think that's what they were doing too, because he's now, 91, 92?
So
if
you listen to him in Rogue One when they do his voice, which I think is just straight up his voice, he definitely sounds older. Whereas this one sounded much closer to the original trilogy, so they're definitely doing some sort of post-processing or synthesizing
it
to make it sound
works
better.
A lot better with the nature of Darth Vader and a character that you don't see their mouth.
Yes.
whereas it, you know, didn't super work for me with Luke. So I guess whatever they're doing, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think it's tough too, right, in this case, because it's like Darth Vader's voice is so iconic that, yeah, like, and there have been instances where other people have had to sub in like various like animated or games or, sure, stuff like that. But it's never as good because, yeah, James Earl Jones's voice is so iconic that you can't. And so you could think if
James Earl Jones from the early 80s, you know, which is, right, no longer available. He is not available, yes, in, yeah, that
and
form
more
to
the
us.
Point, yeah. Yeah. And more on the point, if Disney intends to continue making Star Wars shows set in this period, as you said, yeah, he's 91. He's not going to be around forever, and they're going to want to be able to, yeah, have Darth Vader basically to deploy when they want. So
we'll recast everyone else, but Darth Vader's voice, yep, will live
always
on.
Always be the same. That's right.
I guess the interesting thing when they credit him, you know, yes, what is, and we, I guess we live now in a very complicated world where it's like, oh, yeah, what does that mean?
They have,
right,
to credit him because it's his voice.
Yeah, but they have to,
well,
also,
it gets weird.
Some licensing questions with AI,
yeah,
and
I mean, at a certain point when it's computers, I'm not a computer lawyer, and but whatever, it just, I wonder how involved is someone versus, you know, especially we don't have hundreds and hundreds of hours of Darth Vader audio to, you know, to feed into a system or to cut together, but whatever, it's I'm sure, you know, Disney will reanimate whatever zombies they need for forever. So
speaking of Darth Vader, I think it's a good opportunity to address some reader mail. This comes,
reader mail,
reader,
what?
Sorry, I read it. That's, it's a bit,
I think,
thing.
You mean listener mail, Dan. It's
in,
not Biff.
Biff, we always say readers,
listener email,
listener emails, sorry, mm-hmm, distinct, hollow communications from,
no,
listeners.
Too much. Too much.
This is from TJ, a frequent listener and a writer on some other shows that I've been on as well. TJ says, I have questions about Obi-Wan and Darth and Star Wars, and I am hoping that the show might answer some very long-standing questions I have about Obi-Wan and Darth Vader's showdown in the original Star Wars, 1977. One, when Vader feels Obi-Wan and tells Tarkin, Obi-Wan is here, the Force is with him. And Tarkin says, if you are right, he must not be allowed to escape. Escape is not his plan. I must face him alone. Why wouldn't escape be his plan? Obi-Wan never said anything about another plan. What's this other plan? Why wouldn't Obi-Wan want to escape? Well, TJ, I'm going to take these in turn. And before we get to number two, we'll say, I think his plan there is exactly the same as his plan in this episode, which is keep Vader away from his own kids. He gets,
oh, because he still doesn't know
time.
Luke,
yeah,
at that point.
He wants to buy, yeah, time for Luke and Han and Leia. Luke and Leia, they're both there. Get them off the Death Star.
Yeah, do not have them together on the same Imperial battle station.
Controlled,
that's real bad
by
luck,
their dad.
Yeah, and again, the fact that we are retconning that entire movie so that Obi-Wan knows who Leia is and knows how important she is.
Frankly, knows that who Luke is, too, because the Darth Vader father thing was not the original plan either.
Yeah, it gets, but like, it actually works better now.
Dan, it came fully formed out of George Lucas's forehead, and he just wrote it down.
The Book of the Wills. Is that what it was?
Yeah, Journal of the Wills.
Journal of the Wills. It is also, I wonder, too, and going down the Qui-Gon sort of route.
I got a question.
Well,
about
I wonder
that
too. That's some of his strategy, is like, if he is planning, he's like, well, I'm going to go there, I'm going to sacrifice myself, and because of the way the Force works, right, if I do that thing, like, it's still a question of how you become a Force ghost. And if there's something about that, like, he needs to die in that way so he can be a Force ghost, because he knows that's the only way that he'll be able to continue to guide Luke and presumably Leia.
Yeah, I think there's a part of that. I think, you know, there's a little bit of, there's a little bit of the Doctor Strange in Infinity War sort of thing. Like, yeah, there's only one way this works. But I think a lot of it is just, you know, he is there to ensure, he knows how important Luke and Leia are, and he is.
They
there
met
to
a smuggler and a Wookiee. They don't need me anymore. They have
the
a sweet
option.
Ride. I'm out.
The other option is it was just a cool sounding line, and it didn't have any real purpose at the time.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Question two: Obi-Wan says Darth can't win. Why does Obi-Wan tell Vader, "You can't win. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine"? Because he can talk to Luke after death. Doesn't seem enough. I'd want to be alive. Maybe Obi-Wan was ready to fully join the Force. I think it's kind of touching on what we just discussed.
No, I don't know. TJ has a point.
No, he does. Well, so I mean,
yeah, no, that's fair.
Again, it's a great line, but like, does it?
I and you, you know, I think Obi-Wan, he's got the power of whether it's belief or knowledge of prophecy on his side. He's playing space chess while Darth Vader's playing checkers. I think maybe he's also, I wonder if there's a little bit of like, this is not just the path to the Empire falling, but maybe to, you know, you coming around, can we save your soul or whatever your midichlorian equivalent of a soul is, Anakin, before it's too late. I will die for your sins.
New theory. Yeah. I would actually like to posit that Obi-Wan Kenobi deserves the credit for blowing up the Death Star. Because when Luke is in the trench, failing miserably to launch
a ghost talks to him.
He tells him to use the Force and guides him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in many ways, it was really Obi-Wan we should be thankful for. Luke gets all the credit, but...
He is my co-pilot.
But did not Qui-Gon Jinn teach Obi-Wan? And so it's Qui-Gon Jinn. And in this comic book that I haven't read, Qui-Gon Jinn's master... I'm done.
But wasn't
follow
it Yoda?
The money.
Yeah.
I think, again, it's sort of a fatalistic thing, and I think it's also a degree of Obi-Wan realizing, like, this is the culmination in his of confronting Vader is the moment that he is there for. He's like, look, I'm here to try and, you know, confront my old friend one last time. And I realize going in, I'm probably not going to make it out alive. And I think his solace is in the fact that he has this ability to maintain a connection with the Force, which we haven't really had fully fleshed out yet. But I think we may see a little bit more of here in this show. Maybe. We'll see. I got two more parts of this, so let's zip through. Related, why does Obi-Wan give up? Possibly related to the previous question, when Obi-Wan sees Luke and the others head for the Falcon, he puts up his lightsaber, which allows Vader to seemingly kill to defeat him. Closest I can come to an answer here is Obi-Wan doesn't want Luke at all to wait for him, but allowing himself to seemingly be killed causes Luke to cry out, drawing the attention of the stormtroopers, etc. Would have been better to keep the fight going at least long enough to let them get away, but maybe they wouldn't have wanted to leave him if he was still alive. Anyone have a better answer? My headcanon's always been that he's essentially meditating, and it's whatever preamble to him joining the Force.
I guess mine is also in his big picture planning. Luke needs to see him die, because otherwise he's going to be like, turn the Falcon around. We got to get him.
Right.
And also, like, his death is what is going, his kind of martyr-like death is what's going to spur Luke on to... I'll go into battle with the rebellion. I'm never going back to Tatooine, except later I have to go back to Tatooine. Luke needs to see it. There's also the thing where it's like, I mean, their fight is not the most thrilling of fight. I kind of feel like even if Kenobi had the ability to kill Darth Vader, that is not the way that it's, you know, like, that's not what he's there to do.
And it's, but it... Because it's not just, I agree, and I think there's also the needing, again, when they wrote this originally, the movie, I don't think they were thinking
any of
this.
The short answer is, they did not.
But in retrospect of, like, recognizing the need for Luke to go on the emotional journey to, like, of both Obi-Wan and to come to terms with his father being Darth Vader and to, like, want to rescue him. If that was, and it clearly wasn't, but if that actually was Obi-Wan's intent all along, then there's, I think, starting him on that emotional journey, too. But again... Yeah. They clearly didn't have my way with the first one.
The short answer is this is all part of the trope of the hero's journey. It was like your mentor, you lose your mentor at a certain point, you must come into your own, etc. Like, it's all very formulaic in the way that the story is put together. And I think, you know, having him surrender in that moment shows it's a different move too, right? If he just gets beaten, like if Obi-Wan just gets beaten, that's
weakness.
A very different message to everybody.
But this shows incredible strength, and I think it also convinces Luke that if there's great strength in the Force.
Right, exactly. Because he feels like he trusts in the Force so much that he would let himself be killed.
So what's the fourth question?
Last part. Why does Vader step on Obi-Wan's robes? Obi-Wan disappears, Vader steps on his robes several times. It looks like Vader is trying to snuff out a fire. Does he think Obi-Wan might have shrunken down the size of a mouse or something? What am I missing? I have to say, when I was in camp and maybe, I don't know, I was like 10 to 12, we made a parody of Star Wars, which had a couple of good scenes in it. One of which I enjoyed, where we did the version of the scene with where Luke fights the remote on the Falcon, but it was somebody holding a tennis ball on a string, and then they just kept whacking whoever was Luke with the tennis ball. But my favorite bit ever, because I think it was just comedy timing perfect, as we had the lightsaber fight and then we cut to the robes lying on the ground, and you just have a beat And then there's just a janitor broom that comes along and sweeps up the robes right off the screen. But Tony, you're absolutely right. That's for the audience. Yeah. That's the audience being told, like, he's not there. Spooky.
Yeah.
And presumably because, as we see with Yoda later, when he dies, some part of this process involves your corporeal body disappearing. Qui-Gon's body does not disappear at the end of Empire of Phantom
Menace. As we said
last
time, again, we're getting to the Force magic and things being written 30 years apart, yep. like or yep. 20 years
but
apart.
But I think
just
they're
like,
going to try to bring it all back.
Let this one go, right?
Mm.
Let this one go.
It's just a show. Well, I should really just
and
relax.
Actually, wait, Dan, so, because I forgot. So, Qui-Gon's body doesn't, in episode one, Phantom Menace, Qui-Gon's body
him.
Doesn't, they yeah. burn him. They also burn, spoilers for Return of the Jedi, Anakin's body.
Oh,
they
that's
burn
true.
Armor.
And he's walking around. No,
no, they burn the
yeah,
body.
I guess
they
the burn
the body.
There.
And
he
then died. he's there as a ghost later.
But yeah. only in the special edition.
No, in the original, no.
he's in
there
too. Oh,
yes,
you're
in the
right.
Special,
they
changed replaced with Hayden Christensen.
He's by Hayden Christensen.
Oh, that's
he gets
right.
to be young, whereas Alec Guinness has to stick around.
Which does, that doesn't make any sense.
No, if I can say, I hate the special editions so much.
Yeah,
so much.
I mean, Your Honor, may I protest on grounds of ghost law? But yeah, so because Darth Vader doesn't disappear.
You're right.
He,
you're
has
right
to,
he doesn't.
He has
you're,
to drag
I
his
totally
body to
yeah,
a
yeah, yeah.
to a shuttle and fly down. So apparently,
it could
they
have
disappeared
on the way down.
So maybe
you have
it's,
to be or ceremonial burning.
Yeah, meditation so. Or ceremonial burning. That's how you become a Force ghost. Listeners, do not try this at home.
I don't know. My reading of it is like lots of Jedi can be Force ghosts. It's just many of them are like, nah.
It's so much effort.
I got things.
I'm good.
I've got
I'm ready
things
to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know what? Like, especially, you know, we even get the mention here of the reminder that Obi-Wan is like, oh, yeah, I think I had a brother. I don't know my parents. I was taken away.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Jedi are not great. They're maybe, you know. yeah.
Actually, I wondered if that was I don't know because I haven't read enough like of the current expanded universe stuff, you know, that's canon to know whether or not any of that has any, you know, likelihood. But I saw it as a tip of the hat to two things. One, that Anakin is kind of his brother. And two, if you go way back, this is not true. This is just a little Easter egg that I thought was funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Originally in the Star Wars novelization, Owen is his brother.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah.
Which I felt like was a little tip of the hat to that. And speaking of which, I wanted to mention the Easter egg that I showed you, Kat, from last week, or from episode two of Obi-Wan, where he's on the street on the planet and the girl comes up to him and tries to sell him drugs and has that line about, like, I was someone's daughter once. That actress is Ewan McGregor's daughter, which was an Easter egg for that episode.
I think we even skipped over in the last episode talking about we had the cameo from I'm blanking on his name. Who plays Boba Fett? Is there as the
Timur
war
Morrison
veteran
as the clone?
Yeah, so he was like right before the girl
right.
walks
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
that was great.
A little tip
that
of the hat
great.
Too. I like that too. And he gives
so
him
many
money.
Hats.
So many
tips.
Hats being tipped. I did want to mention just in the last bit to connect to the questions we were just talking about and thinking about where Obi-Wan is going from here. I feel like we're still have to be on this path of Obi-Wan achieving some sort of balance or forgiveness of himself.
Yeah.
And part of me wonders, given his, you know, trying to find the connection to Qui-Gon, is it just like, is like the next 8 years him just talking to Qui-Gon's ghost and like that's like his therapist basically helping him?
I feel like Qui-Gon just shows up and he's like, Obi-Wan, really? This is what we've been doing? This, I thought I thought you better.
But he's clearly, by the time we get to A New Hope, right, Obi-Wan's going to be back into Force use because he's very comfortable doing it to distract the droids. He's going to be a little more comfortable using, like, we have to get back to that cool, collected guy, right?
He's going to start doing push-ups in the last episode.
That's I'm expecting a montage. The Darth Vader, right? With the Darth
working
Vader.
Working on his,
oh,
every
Darth
day,
Vader.
Working
Darth
on
Maul.
His, cr-
yeah.
When he fights Darth Maul, he's an amazing, he's a master swordsman.
Yeah.
And so, like, clearly he has to get back to that. But I think from where we're going, right, we're going to stay with the Leia plot, which is great. I'm loving the Leia plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to, so Leia's now been taken by Reva, and Obi-Wan's gonna have to get her back
And recover a bit because he got his butt kicked.
He got his butt
fight.
Kicked, mm-hmm. And he also, I think there's an interesting thing here of going from the badass galactic Jedi master to now having to ask for help. He's injured, he doesn't know where she is, and I think there's a little bit of, I wonder if we're also going to see him still in a really rough place because now he's essentially failed Leia too.
Yeah,
he has failed the daughter of Padme and Anakin, two people he loved very much and has now failed all of them. So I think we're going to hopefully see him grapple with that as well. And I think really push him to go after her.
I agree.
So let me ask, any we're other? Halfway.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
We're halfway in, three out of six episodes. How are we feeling about this compared to other Star Wars media we have recently consumed for this podcast?
That feels like a loaded question, Tony. They know what they're doing. I feel there's very confident storytelling in this. I've enjoyed all three episodes. Honestly, any complaints I have are incredibly minor. Like this, to me, this feels like a great Star Wars story. It's not a Star Wars story we've really seen before, but I also enjoy that it's, I know this will be unpopular opinion in some quarters, but I enjoy that it's part of this continuum we have seen with Jedi's dealing with failure, right? Like with the Luke plot in episode 8, I feel like this is close cousin to that, which is dealing with this idea that they're not infallible superheroes. They have problems and they have, issues, including with their like mental health and all this stuff that is really, scarring in a lot of ways. So I've enjoyed this story immensely. I'm very curious to see how the back half plays out.
Kat?
I love it. I genuinely love it. I think the pacing is excellent. I love the characters. I think the scripting is good. The plot works well. And I always care about character motivations and that, like, I like people doing things not just because, oh, we have to go over here now. It's like, oh, it makes sense you're going from here to here to here. And so if I were to rank these, I would say this is definitely above Boba Fett. For me, also above Bad Batch. I would put it on par with the first season of Mandalorian, which I put it.
Yeah.
I'm really, really enjoying it. The only thing that I think is a little clunky, and a friend of mine pointed this out too, is I think the action sequences are actually the clunkiest bit. I think they're, I can't remember if we talked about this last episode, but they do seem to go on slightly too long. But honestly, if that's my only issue, I can live with that. And I'm perfectly fine for that to be the weak point when everything else being really engaging. What do you think, Tony?
I think I'm about where you are in that it's, I got to see how these next three episodes turn out, but I think it is on track to be evenly matched with or surpass The Mandalorian. And it is a different kind of creature than The Mandalorian, where The Mandalorian felt pretty episodic, or at least, I mean, there were through lines, but each episode was kind of a very different thing. And I love how much this is just like, oh, this is just a story that we're telling in 6 hours. It's not quite a movie that's been cut into six pieces. I mean, that's not how episodic television works, but it feels closer to that in terms of their sensibilities and threads that connect through this. And we don't have that thing where each episode has like a very different style or tone or structure to it. So I'm liking that. I'm liking that a lot. I feel like we are living in, of course, a time of peak TV and especially peak nerd TV. And I was trying to compare this a little bit to some of the Marvel series, and perhaps I'm being extra influenced by just having watched the making of Moon Knight. But I think there's some similarities to that, which I thought was a very cohesive show. And I'm also watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which is like my favorite thing in the world right now. So what I'm saying is everything is great.
I wanted to add, because I don't think we really explicitly said it, but I think it's worth saying, Ewan McGregor, who is, carrying this show, is doing a fantastic job, right?
Like
this version of that character, in some ways it feels like a way to sort of rehabilitate the prequels. And he was never the weakest link in those by any means, but it gives us an idea of what that could have looked I think it goes a long way towards, I mean, honestly, giving him so much ownership of that character too, given that he has now played him for more than Alec Guinness did, right? I think it gives him a lot more iconic associations with that character, which I think is, it's good. He's handling it well. He's doing a great job. I mean, the entire cast, really, but I wanted to single him out since just the show is about him. This whole thing would not have happened without him. So I think he's doing great work here. Well, we will be back to talk about part 4 of Obi-Wan Kenobi next week. And if you would like to write in and if you've got questions for us or comments, you can do so acp@theincomparable.com, or you can find us on Twitter at @ACP_cast. And yeah, we'll be back for another episode. I want to, of course, as always, thank my fabulous co-host, Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Anytime. Goodbye, nerds.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
It's been fun. And I believe there was a request for me to do a rundown on all the public transit that we've seen in the Star Wars world. And I will work on that.
Okay. All right.
That's what we call a teaser, kids.
Tune in for that. You're not going to want to miss it.
It's interesting for me.
It's not interesting.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We really appreciate it. Of course, your letters, your tweets, all of your messages, and just showing up for the show. And we'll be back next week. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Always.